Chapter 4. Jesse Stone didn't strike out, not in softball, yet he was in danger of doing just that. He stepped out of the batter's box with a two-strike count against him. Resting the knob of the bat against his left thigh, he tugged at the left shoulder of his jersey, squeezed his shoulder blades together, stretched his neck, and closed his eyes. He took three deep breaths, trying to refocus his mind on the task at hand. Because Jesse had once been a phone call away from starting at shortstop for the L.A. Dodgers, he understood better than most that physical gifts were only part of the equation. Aside from talent, the other element separating highly skilled athletes from everyone else was the power of concentration. Whether he was in the midst of a hostage crisis or standing in the middle of the infield during a Pacific Coast League championship game, Jesse could shut out the rest of the world. Suit had once asked Jesse if the crowd noise ever bothered him during a big game. Jesse laughed, not at Suit, at himself. "You know, Suit," he'd said, "I never heard the crowd." And as Jesse dug his back foot into the dirt of the batter's box, preparing to wait for the next pitch, he laughed at himself again. Many years and many miles separated Jesse from those big games. This was the Paradise Slow Pitch Beer League, and the crowd, if you could call it that, consisted of wives and kids and girlfriends, and a few drunk guys whose games were already over. Still, try as he might to collect his thoughts, Jesse couldn't focus. He had his reasons. One of them was the former FBI special agent sitting in the stands on the first base side of the diamond. She was a stunning, sharp-witted blonde named Diana Evans. If Jesse had been given the power to create his perfect woman, he would have created Diana. They'd first met in New York City at the ill-fated reunion of Jesse's AAA baseball team. Although it had taken a long time for them to end up together, together they were, sort of. Diana wasn't the settling-down type, and even if she had been, small-town New England wasn't where she would have picked to do it. For the time being, she was working as a security consultant for a high-tech firm in Boston. She came up to Paradise most weekends, and Jesse spent his free weeknights at her Cambridge apartment. The arrangement seemed to work for them both. Then there was Jesse's drinking, or rather, his lack of it. He had stopped for long periods in his life before now, but, as Dix had said, those other times were like Jesse holding his breath. Sooner or later, he was going to breathe again. Not this time, he thought. Not this time. He stopped drinking for himself and not to prove a point to someone else. Maybe because he had attached the notion of forever to his farewell to Johnny Walker Black Label, stopping hadn't been as easy as during his earlier periods of sobriety. There were days his lack of alcohol really screwed with his usual calm demeanor. His patience was more easily worn thin, and he snapped at Suit and Molly on occasion. But Jesse had no illusions as to why he couldn't focus today. It was the fancy embossed wedding invitation sitting on his desk back at the Paradise PD. Molly had whistled at the sight of it and told him that the gilding on the invitation was the real deal, 24-karat gold leaf. The invitation was irksome enough by itself, but it was the RSVP card and the answer he would have to put on it that haunted his thoughts. That and the conversation he would need to have with Jen about it. "Play ball," the ump said, jarring Jesse out of his trance. "Come on, Chief, sometime before midnight." Jesse got back in the batter's box, gripped the bat, and took a few practice swings. Robbie Wilson, the squat fire chief and pitcher for the Paradise Pumpers, stared in at the catcher and went into his windup. Jesse locked eyes on the release point of Wilson's pitch, followed its high arc, waiting for the ball to come to him. He repeated to himself the mantra of every batting coach he'd ever had, "Let the pitch come to you. Let the pitch come to you." Yet somewhere between the zenith of the pitch and its fall toward home plate, Jesse got lost in his own head again. Whether it was muscle memory or pure instinct, he swung the bat without actually seeing the ball. Instead of the usual crisp ping of metal alloy making flush contact with the ball, there was a rubbery, dull thud. And when Jesse snapped back into the moment, he was pumping his arms, running hard as he could toward first base. He caught sight of the ball, centered between the pitcher's mound, the foul line, and first. The ball was spinning sideways like a cue ball, the way it does when hit off the very end of the bat. Robbie Wilson bent down to field it and, tripping over his own feet, collided with his first baseman. The first baseman swiped at the ball as he fell, knocking it away from both men and into foul territory. Jesse reached first safely, and Suit Simpson scored from third. Jesse hadn't struck out. The winning run had crossed home on what had been very generously scored an infield hit and RBI for the chief. Yet even as the team swarmed around him, slapping his back, hugging him, shaking his hand, the reality of what had happened wasn't lost on him. No, he hadn't struck out, but he'd come pretty damn close. And when he looked up into the stands for Diana, he noticed a roiling line of lead-gray clouds stretching across the horizon. The meaning of those clouds wasn't lost on him either.